Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're closing out this period with something really essential, a deep dive into a sermon that I think cuts straight to the heart of doubt and fear. The sermon we're looking at is called A Life That Cannot End in Failure, and it's all built on Jesus' final words to his disciples in the Gospel of John, specifically chapter 16.
And the context here is just, it's everything. The sermon refers to this as the essential farewell discourse. This isn't some abstract teaching.
Right.
This is raw, immediate truth delivered just hours before his arrest. He knew the disciples were, well, operating on a faith that was about to be completely shattered. This was his lifeline to them.
So our mission today is to really unpack the three key elements from this teaching that that guarantee our lives can't end in failure. We'll look at how to tell real faith from fake, what divine peace actually is, and the certainty of a victory that's already been won. Let's jump right in with that first point, which is all about the fragility of our own confidence. In the text, the disciples are just thrilled with themselves.
Oh, completely. Jesus has just spoken plainly, and they basically declare, "We finally get it."
They say he's speaking clearly, without any metaphors. They think they've cracked the code.
It's a real moment of, you know, intellectual pride. They're looking at each other thinking, we've arrived, we believe you came from God because you know all things, and now you're speaking our language.
They feel strong, competent, ready, like they're telling Jesus, we're prepared, we'll follow you through anything.
And that's what makes Jesus' response in verse 31 so powerful. He just asks them, do you now believe?
It sounds gentle, but it's really a cross-examination, isn't it?
It is. The sermon we analyzed makes it clear this wasn't Jesus doubting their sincerity. It was a loving act to force them to look inward.
To self-examine.
Exactly. He saw their conviction for what it was, premature confidence. They were confident in the calm, but they hadn't faced the storm yet.
Which really gets to the heart of faith itself. If they could be so sure and yet so wrong, what makes faith genuine?
Well, the sermon uses that classic analogy of the house built on sand. Fake faith looks impressive, it looks secure, but it has no foundation.
And you never really know what your foundation is made of when the weather's nice.
You don't. We feel great when work is going well, when our family is healthy, when we're surrounded by friends. That's not the test.
The test is the crisis.
The test is the crisis. The sermon calls it the crisis of life, and that's when you find out if you're built on sand or on rock. Jesus wasn't praising their strength. He was showing them their weakness so they could build on something real.
So the question for you, the believer, isn't just, do I have faith? But is my faith rooted enough to survive when everything else falls apart?
That's the takeaway. Real faith is what's left standing after everything you thought was reliable is gone.
And the reality check that comes right after that question is it's breathtakingly honest.
He goes from gently probing their faith to predicting their complete and painful failure. In verse 32, he just spells it out.
No sugarcoating it.
None. He says, behold, the hour is coming when you will be scattered each to his own home and will leave me alone. He predicts their total collapse.
To flee in the face of suffering and abandon the person you just swore to follow, I mean, that's the ultimate failure for a disciple.
It shatters the confidence they just declared. He basically showed them a video of their own future retreat moments after they boasted of their courage.
It really highlights how weak our own resolve can be. We mean well, but when that crisis hits,
we scatter.
Right.
We choose self-preservation. And that's why the statement that follows is so profound. After predicting their failure, Jesus says, yet I am not alone because the Father is with me.
Let's just pause on that for a second. That pivot is everything. He goes from their failure to his constancy.
Yes, and think about when he's saying this. He's facing betrayal, abandonment by his closest friends, the cross, the most absolute isolation imaginable. And in that moment, he declares he is not alone.
That's an incredible truth for us. It means our ultimate companionship doesn't depend on human loyalty.
Or even our own ability to stay the course.
Right. When everyone else has fled, when you feel completely abandoned, that divine presence is the one thing that remains. It stabilizes everything.
It reframes the entire situation. The disciples' failure isn't the main story. The victory is guaranteed because of Jesus' unbreakable relationship with the Father. Our failure is a known variable. His faithfulness is the constant.
So why tell them all this?
Yeah.
Why predict their scattering and then immediately talk about this divine companionship? He actually answers that right in verse 33.
He does. He says, I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. That's the whole point. The whole reason for this difficult conversation is to give them access to genuine peace.
But we have to be so clear about what this peace is and what it isn't.
Oh, absolutely. It is not the removal of suffering. In fact, he promises the exact opposite.
He guarantees it. In the world, you will have tribulation.
Right. And that word, tribulation, means crushing pressure. The sermon gives real-world examples. Being hated for your beliefs, deep loneliness, enduring unfairness. This is part of the package.
So if the peace isn't the absence of trouble, then what is it?
It has to be a different kind of peace entirely. A heavenly peace that can exist alongside the chaos.
A peace that doesn't make sense from the outside?
Exactly. And the sermon uses that incredible image from the Psalms. Preparing a table, a feast, in the presence of your enemies.
That is such a powerful picture. The enemies aren't gone. They're right there watching you.
But they've lost their power over your inner state. You are secure. You are at peace eating a meal, even with the danger right there.
Which is why the location he mentions is so critical. This peace is found in me.
That's the key. The sermon says true faith doesn't change your circumstances. It changes the you who is dealing with the circumstances.
So if I'm anchored in Christ, the storm outside, the job loss, the bad diagnosis, whatever it is, it's still raging, but it can't capsize the boat.
It can't. You can sit down to that feast while the wind howls. And that brings us right back to needing a real tested faith to even know that's possible.
Okay, so with that inner peace established, a peace that exists in tribulation, Jesus gives them the final climactic command.
It's the end of verse 33. Be courageous, or take heart. And the source material points out that this specific command, in this form, only appears once in the entire Gospel of John.
So it carries a ton of weight.
A huge amount. But it's crucial to see that this boldness isn't about gritting your teeth and trying harder. That's what failed the disciples in the first place.
Right. It can't be based on our own strength.
No, the courage is rooted entirely in what comes next. Christ's declaration, I have overcome the world.
And notice the tense. It's not, I will overcome.
It's past tense. I have overcome. It's a done deal, a finished action.
The victory is final and complete. The cross and resurrection have already happened from his perspective. The world system of sin and death has already been defeated.
Which brings up the obvious question. If the victory is already won, why do we still feel so defeated all the time? Why does the pain and the failure feel so real?
And this is where that analogy from the sermon is just so helpful.
It's perfect. Living with this kind of boldness is like watching a replay of a game you know your team has already won.
Yes. You see the tough moments in the replay, the fumbles, the times the other team is ahead.
You might groan, you might get tense for a second, but you don't despair, you don't panic.
Because you know the final score. You know how it ends.
That's the power of this statement. Our life is the replay. The final outcome has been decided by Christ. So our courage doesn't come from us trying to win. It comes from us believing the final scoreboard.
It means every single setback is temporary. It's just a moment in a story that has a guaranteed triumphant ending.
And that brings us full circle, doesn't it? Back to the reality of our own failure, which Jesus said would happen and which we all experience.
We do. We fall short. We have countless moments of discouragement. Like the disciples, we get fooled by what the sermon called a false defeat, and we scatter.
We have to be honest about that weakness. But the ultimate conclusion of the sermon is so powerful. The story does not end here.
Even when we fail, God doesn't treat us like orphans. He doesn't abandon us.
And this is where that deep theological concept comes in, the perseverance of the saints, which just means God maintains his grip on the believer.
He maintains us.
He does. The sermon explained that the original theological term implies being pulled or towed. God continually pulls us, ensuring that despite our scattering and our failures, we are brought to that place of final victory. Our personal failings can't undo his commitment to us.
So even in our worst moment, when we've run the farthest, God is still at work, pulling us back toward that finish line.
Absolutely, which reinforces the whole theme. Because we are held by the victor, our lives literally cannot end in failure. It's an impossibility because the author of our story has already written the final chapter.
What an incredible journey from diagnosing our own premature confidence all the way to the promise of peace in the middle of tribulation. And it's all grounded in a victory that's already been won. The instruction for you, the believer, is to embrace the boldness that comes from that. Your certainty isn't in your performance, but in his.
And that leaves us with one last thing to think about. The sermon contrasts the world's idea of victory, you know, power, success, never losing, with the biblical one.
But it's completely paradoxical.
Totally. It's a final triumph achieved through apparent defeat, with the cross as the ultimate example. So here's the question to take with you. If you know the final outcome of this war of life is Christ's victory, how does that change the way you face conflict or setbacks today? If you can truly watch your life like a victorious game replay, how do you apply that ultimate victory declaration, "I have overcome the world," to whatever challenge is right in front of you now? Something to chew on.